Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This week on Lunchbox Envy, we've been eating them for almost 9 millennia.
You can harvest them from the same tree for more than 300 years.
And in Iran, they're nicknamed Khandani, the smiling nut.
It's pistachios! Hello and welcome to Lunchbox Envy. I'm Rosie, I'm a chef and food writer, and I'm here with my two QI elves, Jack and Manu. Hello.
Hello. I noticed in the script it says my two QI elves, which seems like very possessive.
I always add a possessive to you both, because I believe you are mine.
You are the podcast mummy.
I'll take it. So, a very prolific nut today.
Yeah. Prolific
the pistachio.
Nut.
Mm-hmm. We've covered peanuts, haven't we?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think this is our second nut.
This is our second nut.
Oh, have we actually covered a nut yet?
We must have done.
Well,
this.
Technically, sure, a peanut is not a bloody nut.
Is it pistachio?
No, it's not.
For fuck's sake, every time.
What keeps coming up is that it's one of the only two nuts mentioned in the Bible. So it's an almond and a pistachio, both in the Old Testament. Neither are nuts.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, but in the sort of generally accepted nut category, what is the best one? I think it's high time to do some nut ranking, to be honest.
Oh,
okay. We could.
I think Brazil.
Ooh.
Insert.
So controversial.
Oh, I know. Number one's cashew.
Wow.
Wait, I'm doing this in a weird order. What's my number two? What's better than a Brazil nut, but worse than a cashew? Probably pistachio, to be honest.
Ooh. Interesting. Yeah.
My favourite nuts. Walnut, pistachio, hazelnut.
Yeah. Yeah, I am way more positive and supportive of that, those three choices. Mm-hmm. Walnuts, delicious. A little bit stringy and flaky, though. Mm. That's the only thing. That skin really is a bugger, isn't it? And hazelnuts, absolutely sensational nut. That's a lovely nut, that.
And?
Really useful, really delicious.
Mm-hmm. And a true nut. Yeah.
I'm going to go number one, almond.
Oh, good choice.
And I say it correctly, almond. If you say
people,
almond,
I can say.
Get in the bin. Second of all, I'm going to go pecan.
Woo!
Oh. Wow! Where did that come from? Those are some great nuts. The pecans are delicious. Brilliant for baking, brilliant for cereals. I think a toasted pecan is far superior to a toasted cashew. And then I'm going peanut. Where are they? Okay. They're delicious, useful. They create a sensational oil for cooking, as well as a delicious butter. Yeah, they're just a 10 out of 10 nut. I will generally agree that pistachio is up there with some of, or one of the, you know, I'd say in the top 8 nuts.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Top 8 nuts.
So anyway, pistachios.
Yes.
Pistacchio. Pistacchi is the plural.
Oh.
Yes, it is. We've taken the Italian word pistachio, but we are pronouncing it wrong with a soft C. But
so it should be pistacchio.
Yeah.
On that, actually, I was looking into the etymology, and it ultimately comes from the Persian root, which is pistache, but it's spelled pistakes.
Oh.
I was just reading about pistakes.
So good.
I looked at the OED website, which helpfully told me that 0.3 out of every million words written in modern English is pistachio.
Oh. Mm.
So 0.3 parts per million in English.
Well, we've been eating pistachios for such a long time in this country.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
So long.
Even though they're not native to this country. Mm-hmm.
So they came over with the Romans, we think. But the oldest surviving pistachio, so intact pistachio seed,
okay,
will
in
come
its,
on
in its
to,
shell.
Yeah, in the shell, was found at the bottom of a well in Catterick in North Yorkshire in 2021.
Wow. Wait, how old is it?
It was dated between 24 and 128, 2,000 years old. And so, yeah, we've been eating them in the UK for a long time.
Well, not eating them, as it seems to be the case.
Pistachio trees grow in a really cool way.
Mm-hmm.
So they're dewy. I can never
dioecious.
Say this. Thank
dioecious.
You,
Dan. Dioecious.
We spoke about dioecious trees when we were talking about avocados.
Yes.
But pistachio trees are more like one or the other. So if you're growing a pistachio orchard, you have to grow male trees upwind of your female trees.
No.
And they'll have like a harem of females. So like one male tree for 8 to 24 females, and you plant the males upwind because they're wind pollinated. So when the wind passes through, all of their spermy stuff, I obviously didn't do
pistachio. The pollen.
All of the,
I think the correct term is pistachio sperm.
Yeah, all of the pistachio sperm blows into the female trees, and then they get pregnant and they have pistachio babies, and the babies are drupes. So with pistachios, when they're growing on the tree, they actually look like grapes. So they're like kind of big fleshy grape olively looking things. And then inside of that, there's a fleshy middle. And a lot of pistachio trees are actually used for oil production. Mm. Right in the middle is the endocarp, with the bit that we eat in the middle.
Just going back to the pollen spreading, apparently if you have, because pistachio nuts grow in very hot places, but they need very cold winters, so they don't grow in tropical countries where the temperature doesn't vary much.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens if you have a bad winter, i.e. one that doesn't get cold enough, because basically pistachio trees need a long cooling off period in order to regather the sort of energy and minerals and nutrients to flower and seed at the right time. But a lot of males, if they have like a warm winter, will basically come too late. As I read, there was one pistachio farmer in California who was like, it's a bit like all the men waking up from a nap and going to the party and all the women are all left.
Oh,
so you have to get it right. And what happens is the trees end up growing the fruit with the seeds inside.
Mm.
When you crack open the shells, there's just nothing inside.
So,
and they call them growing blanks.
I love how they have a really productive year and then a really lazy year.
Yes.
So they're alternate bearing. So you got to get them at the right time, but they don't always bear fruit. So they'll have like a glut one year and then they'll be like, you know what? I worked really, really hard this year.
I'm taking it off.
Exactly.
And that's after a winter of cooling off.
Gosh, no wonder they're bloody expensive.
Yeah.
They're an absolute nightmare. A diva of the nut world, I'd call them.
They're quite expensive, yeah.
They're very expensive.
Yeah, they are. So just in terms of where they grow, today, the US, especially in California, they grow the most. The US grows about 47% of the world's pistachios, which is a lot.
Iran used to be the world leader in terms of production. And then I think because of the Iranian revolution in the late 70s, they sort of stopped exporting them, which meant the USA, that had a taste for pistachios, had to sort of ramp up production and fill the gaps. And that's why California grows 99% of the USA's pistachio crop.
Exactly.
And they make almost half the world now.
The variety of female pistachio tree that grows most commonly around the world, particularly in California, named after the city in Iran where the tree is from. And then the males are called Peters.
Oh.
I know.
Wait, is that just
Peter
like...
the pistachio. Why has no one written that children's book?
Yeah.
Right, TM, I'm doing it.
Oh,
don't worry.
Another product we've come up with.
Shall we dive into our first nutty old lunchbox?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Okie dokie. I have brought the product, or a version of it, that caused the international pistachio shortage of 2025.
Wow, how big is it?
Oh,
I've brought...
Oh my God!
Big Daddy! It's the Big Daddy from M&S. The Marks & Spencer's Dubai chocolate.
This looks like the biggest, chonkiest chocolate bar I've ever seen.
It was a whopping £8.50.
Oh my God. For the uninitiated, i.e. me, what is Dubai chocolate?
So, it refers to a bar of chocolate made by a chocolatier in Dubai, funnily enough, called Fix Dessert Chocolatier. There were a couple who were originally from the UK. It's basically a big bar of quite colourful, very delicious looking artisanal chocolate filled with pistachio paste, a green paste made from pistachios, Not that particularly original having that, but also it's got Kataifi pastry, which is a very particular pastry to West Asian, Middle Eastern cooking. And it is basically very finely shredded and very crispy. It's what you would see in a dessert called knafe, which is where you get the kind of crispy, woven, spun exterior and the cheesy filling. Anyway, there's no cheese in the chocolate bar, obviously, but the pastry within the paste stays crispy. So the original video was posted on TikTok in 2023 by an influencer called Maria Vejera. And it literally is just her sitting in her car eating this bar of chocolate. And she actually eats a couple of other bars of chocolate. But the first one she eats is the Dubai chocolate bar.
That's really intense.
Is it?
Super intense.
Well, I think the thing that struck me the most is actually it's so crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, what sets it apart, what possibly was the sort of most viral aspect of it, is that, like, you see this beautiful chocolate bar, it's got really creamy looking filling, but she's crunching away because it's got that Kataifi pastry that's incredibly crispy. And obviously it's a very finely made piece of chocolate. They're only available in Dubai on delivery or at various airport lounges, but it's a mukbang video. So it's a video which people would watch to enjoy the process of watching someone eat. She's actually also even dipping it into a bowl of pistachio paste that she's bought separately. The sensory elements are just really bonkers. It's very crunchy, it's creamy, it's thick, it's chocolatey, it's gooey. Actually made me very thirsty to watch. I was hoping she had a bottle of water in there. I was thinking to myself, Maria, you're gonna have a bit of a thirst after that. It has got almost 150 million views on TikTok now, as of this morning when I checked. And it led to a huge increase in pistachio popularity, specifically pistachio paste products, specifically chocolate bar copycats of the Dubai chocolate. Pistachios were on the cultural radar, but they didn't hit the sort of zeitgeist massively until that. Loads of retailers jumped on the bandwagon sensibly. It's worth saying that the M&S version of the Dubai chocolate bar is not a direct copy of the actual Dubai chocolate bar. But M&S were the only supermarket to make a very quick and apparently very delicious version of this chocolate bar, the Big Daddy. So let's dive in.
Yes, it's so good.
I haven't been able to try anything close to the Dubai chocolate, just to say. I don't know if you guys have.
I have. This one is way better than the others I've tried.
Really?
Like, this one is so good. I will say it doesn't have the knafe.
Oh, it doesn't have the pastry.
No, and it's got caramel in it.
So it's, I think it's better.
So I think what I really wanted to talk about with this is that the social media now has changed the way we consume food so much that things like the Dubai chocolate bar can increase the popularity of a foodstuff so vastly that it actually causes a global shortage. And my hot take from this is that pistachios are way more popular than they deserve to be.
Oh, wow. Introducing morals to food.
And the
now.
Reason why is, I think, because they are green and they are creamy. We consume food with our eyes now, right? We're obsessed with visual appeal. And other generations, they must think we're bonkers. Like, I know that my grandmother-in-law has asked me several times when I tell her that I'm a recipe writer, haven't the recipes all been written? The fact that we're so obsessed with the look of food and looking at stuff online, pictures of food, videos of food, is really odd. And the look of a dish is now almost as important as the actual taste of it. And we are so reliant on this priming effect of visual food content. So I want to talk a little bit about visual priming, mental stimulation from food imagery, and how it is actually possible not only to get hungry from looking at pictures of food, but also to get full.
Wow.
Because of modern science, we can now understand the way that we look at food imagery. And actually, visual priming basically makes you get ready to be hungry, get ready to eat and stuff. But it actually can also work the other way. I found some really interesting studies where basically they show that repeated exposure to visual food stimuli actually makes you feel fuller as well.
Oh, really? Yeah.
So there are a couple of studies where...
Top diet tip.
Just look at it.
I mean, that's what people, they were going with. They were kind of like, maybe this is a way to control people's eating habits.
Wow.
But basically, a study done in 2014 where participants had to evaluate the taste of either 20 or 60 salty or sweet food pictures, right? Then they had to eat three peanuts. And they're basically the participants that had evaluated 60 salty food pictures rated the three peanuts as less enjoyable. They didn't enjoy them because they were already full of salty stuff from just from the pictures, right?
It's a bit like how you watch this video, the woman eating the video Dubai chocolate, and you're like, oh, you did say
she's making me thirsty. Yeah. You imagine it so clearly. Your brain works so well at like telling you what you're looking at and how it tastes and what that texture is that you actually make yourself a bit full.
Wow.
And there was a similar study in 2010 where people had to imagine and look at pictures of 30 M&Ms and they had to imagine eating them. And then when they actually were given the M&Ms, they just couldn't eat them because they were full of M&Ms.
Wow.
My God.
I wonder if they were peanut M&Ms.
This is a lesson for all those restaurants that do pictures of their food on the menus.
Yeah.
You're putting people off.
Yeah.
Maybe with this means we shouldn't make our food so pretty because then people won't buy it.
I think it's an interesting dichotomy, right? Where does consumption sort of end in a physical sense and begin in a psychological sense? Like you're consuming food content. So you're like, yeah, delicious. But then actually when you come to eat it, you're like, I couldn't possibly. The other thing that they've discovered recently is actually that there is a hunger hormone, which I don't know if you know about this. It's called ghrelin.
Oh, yes. I've heard of that one.
And visual food cues can stimulate ghrelin production in humans. Mm-hmm. A paper from 2012 showed that the mere sight of food, even a picture of food, a video of a baked bean, can cause a
just one bean.
Can cause like physiologic food anticipation.
To be fair, I often get hungry researching for this podcast.
Mm. Yeah, same. Mm. And also ghrelin is one of the things that makes you hungry at certain times in the day. Mm. So like your body clock of like breakfast, lunch and dinner, that is often stimulated by ghrelin because your brain is like, right, well, I've expended a load of energy now. It's time for a meal. I'm hungry.
Yeah.
And that's ghrelin sort of magic working. I also think that green has its own power in the social media food world. There is a term that's called the health halo, where the color green is instinctively linked to like nature. I read the word naturalness a lot when I was doing this research. And I was like, guys, I'm pretty sure that's not a word. Freshness, plant-based wellness. Mm-hmm. Like green tells you, oh, that's from the earth. One of the other really good examples of like the power of green is matcha.
Mm.
Like matcha is everywhere, right?
Does it taste as good as, I mean, it,
does
sorry,
it, taste it, as good it as doesn't it looks? Taste, it's a really good
it
question.
Just taste.
I don't want to do matcha a disservice because I know that it is like a really ancient and very, you know, sought after tea in Japan. But personally, I'm not a big fan. I think it tastes like fishy grass. But like, a few years ago, people were trying to launch matcha brands in the UK and it wasn't taking because they were going at it from a health angle. Mm. That matcha is really good for you, it's full of antioxidants. Mm-hmm. Then you get companies like Blank Street who are like, no, you know what's good about matcha? It's green. And they start making these amazing blended swirly matcha drinks, put them on social media and that's it. Everyone's got a matcha in their hand because they're green.
Yeah, we did this on the tea episode. That's supposedly why Costa have been struggling recently because they were late to the matcha trend.
Yeah.
So people were like, really, do you have matcha? And they were like, no, sorry.
No.
Oh, I'll go to Starbucks.
Yeah, wow. Exactly. Well, let's talk a bit about green and pistachios, truly, because the pistachio paste that you see in the Dubai chocolate is actually probably a pistachio cream.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There are three products made from ground pistachios, right? So there's paste, cream, and butter.
Mm-hmm.
Butter is essentially like nut butter, so it typically forms a bit more chunky and you can either have a toasted or untoasted versions, but it's not found that much with pistachios. Pistachio paste, most often when you find pistachio paste, you'll notice in big commercial examples, in, you know, large scale production, it's often cut with almonds, which help to enhance its flavor because they are actually a slightly more stronger flavored nut
and cheaper, presumably.
And a lot cheaper. Raw pistachios don't have a particularly pronounced flavor. Certainly the Californian ones don't. Sorry, California. Ooh. Sorry, USA. Your pistachios are dog shit.
Bit in fire.
They need to be toasted in order to get that really recognizable pistachio flavor. Oh. Arguably, all nut flavors that we think of are the toasted versions, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're
okay.
Not ever really thinking of the raw nut flavor when you eat it.
Also add to pistachios, salted.
And salted, very much so.
Commonly so.
Mm-hmm.
The only example I can think of where a nut has a really powerful raw flavor is actually a hazelnut. But to get a green pistachio paste, you wouldn't want to toast the pistachios because they go brown when they're toasted, like every nut. So why are all these pistachio paste green if they are made with toasted pistachios? Basically, some of the best pistachio paste you will see around, the most dark, deeply coloured, are the Sicilian Bronte pistachio pastes. So these pistachios definitely originated from Iran in Central Asia. And then when they were brought to Sicily by the Arabs, they were actually called frastuca. They're still called frastuca in Sicilian. And the town of Bronte sits in Sicily on the slopes of Mount Etna in Catania. This amazing pistachio is able to grow on these very sort of like unique soils. It's a very rare pistachio. It only has a minuscule like portion of global production.
1%, I read.
Yeah, 1%. Well, there you go.
They call it green gold.
It's called green gold because it's incredibly green and delicious looking. And it's incredibly expensive as well.
It's so valuable that farmers there have police protection.
Wow.
So
really?
Thieves were coming around and stealing like up to hundreds and hundreds of pounds of nuts at a time. So they'd shake the trees and then all of the nuts fall down and then just make off with them. So now it's like a kind of national police protection project where they have helicopters circling the orchards.
Presumably every other year, right? Because of the boom and bust.
You're a police officer. Your one job is to protect the pistachios. Mm-hmm. You've got a year off.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, they're kind of the creme de la creme, aren't they?
Well, the reason why they're used a lot for pistachio paste is that their raw flavour is really, really, really strong. Whereas all of these like big, highly commercialised productions of pistachios in the States, for example, the raw flavour is just not going to carry it, right? That's why they have to use almonds. And that's why they have to use chlorophyll. So they put chlorophyll to colour pistachio products that are not green enough. The Sicilian Bronte pistachio paste will not have any chlorophyll in. If they are pure Sicilian Bronte pistachios, they will be bright green, delicious, verdant, and very tasty. But they will also probably set you back £10 to £15. But if you see a pistachio paste that's made from American pistachios, there is a high chance that they would have added a bit of chlorophyll. Basically, sometimes all that green you're responding to isn't natural green at all. It's chlorophyll.
Well, chlorophyll
is
natural.
Which is a natural green.
Well, it is a natural green, but it's added in. I always think it's quite a big green flag if I'm in a restaurant and someone brings me a pistachio ice cream and it's brown. Because then I know they made that pistachio paste in-house, they toasted it, and they don't care that it looks green because it's not supposed to look green if you're actually toasting your nuts.
So you're wearing the true pistachio toasted.
I just want people to toast their nuts properly. That's all I've ever asked for. In the oven, 150 for 15 to 20 minutes.
Nice. 15 to 20 minutes.
If you toast at a lower temp for longer, you get a more deep, thorough toast and you're way less likely to burn your nuts.
Oh, there's the top tip I was looking for.
Pistachio cream is a different product. Let's establish that.
Okay.
Pistachio cream, pistachio paste, not the same thing. Paste, very pure. Pistachio cream usually contains, at a minimum, sugar and milk powder.
Okay.
And it's basically the sweetened version of a pistachio paste. Imagine it is basically pistachio Nutella.
That's why it's so good.
A well-known supermarket brand, I checked the ingredients of it, contains sugar, 30% pistachio nuts, palm oil, rapeseed oil, milk powders, and chlorophyll. All this to say, if you're baking, if you want a very intense pistachio flavour, which is not going to be cut with anything else and which will behave, you know, more akin to like a nut butter, you need to go to pistachio paste. If you're wanting to use something that's a bit more sweet, you're happy for it to go in things like icings, or, you know, you can swirl it into a cake, but it's not going to actually form part of the batter, that's when you'd use a cream. There is a little bit more unstable, and it also will give you a slightly less concentrated flavour because it has been cut with so many other things. So you basically want to use it like Nutella.
Really weird we're talking about the greenness of pistachios, because pistachios actually used to be famously red. Like,
really?
Bright red.
What?
Not naturally. So before the US took over production of pistachios, they used to be shipped all over from Iran quite long distances, and they didn't process them in the same way. So what used to happen is during the drying process, which culture is a lot slower. They used to develop like mottling on the shell.
Oh.
Apparently it was something to do with the handling of them that would cause the mottling. So it was a lot less automated.
Oh, because they handpick them.
Yeah.
Mm.
And some people thought that didn't look very nice. Mm. So what they thought was a good idea was to dye them like bright vermilion red, like wow, crazy cherry soda pop red. So
really?
You'd get your packet of pistachios and it would like stain your fingers, stain your teeth, be really, really red.
Are we talking like Flamin' Hot Cheetos flavor red?
Yeah, like that red.
Are they flavoured? Flavoured?
No, not flavoured.
Red flavour.
Red.
Was it the shell or the meat or both?
Everything.
Whoa.
Red.
Cool.
Super, super red. But what happened was when the US took over production, they had a much faster and more efficient like processing and the mottling didn't happen. So they were like, huh, we can just leave them this kind of greeny brown colour and they actually look quite nice.
The FDA banned a load of food colourings as well in the 70s, I think.
So then we lost the red pistachio.
Bring them back for the Instagram generation. They do numbers.
Our second lunchbox today is from Miss Manu.
Today I have brought an activity.
Of course you have.
We love it. Have you ever had the problem at a party that you are hosting when you put out a bowl of pistachios and you're like, I need another bowl because of all the shells? And you're like, what size bowl is the best size bowl for your pistachio shells?
This sounds like an activity from the misogyny cookbook of women in homes.
Mansplain.
Yeah.
Well, so we are going to test how much space you need for the shells compared to the whole pistachios.
Okay.
We can shell all of these pistachios and find out, or I can just tell you.
Just tell us.
Okay, so in 2024, there are a couple of researchers at the École Polytechnique in Paris. They were eating pistachios in the cafeteria and they had this exact question. And instead of letting it slide, they decided to do a full in-depth study about how much space you'd need for the leftover shells.
Academics, eh?
Yeah. So they took 613 pistachios.
That's a specific amount. Was that just two packets or something?
I know, it was a very specific amount.
Yeah. It's a prime number, isn't it?
So then they put them into a container to find their packing density, which is basically just like how much space they took. And then they shelled them and they put the shells into a container and then they measured that. And that first measurement was about 73%. So it's just a little bit less.
Okay.
Than the original. But then they shook the container and it went all the way down to 57%, which means if you are at a party and you filled one bowl with pistachios that you're about to hull, you need a bowl that's half the size of that bowl and that will be enough.
But is that contingent on you shaking them? And I assume the... No, you know what happens when you shake it?
Mm-hmm.
This bit falls into this bit.
Yes.
They hug each other.
Yes, they do a little pistachio shell hug.
Spoon.
Yeah, they do, they do a little spoon. And then that reduces the volume.
In Italy, they will quite often serve you some nice salty shell on pistachios with your Aperol spritz or your Campari spritz.
Mm.
My God, that's a treat.
It's classy. It is classy.
I actually controversially think that pistachios shell on taste better than pistachios shell off.
Oh, I back you there.
Maybe
not as in like I'm not eating them with the shell.
I was gonna say,
but I think
to be
clear. But when I shell one of these pistachios and I eat it, I'm like, that flavour is really good.
It does in my head. It feels fresher as well. Like it's more crunchy.
I wonder if there's an element of like having handled the shell. You get a little puff of fragrance.
Also, you eat with your... We talked about eating with your eyes. We also eat with our fingertips as well. We find food more satiating when we've been handling it a lot with our hands than when we use a knife and fork.
And
I also think the age-old thing that I talk about a lot is the old trips to mouth. You love a multiple trips to mouth, and a nut is a great one because you can go back and forth, in and out.
Also the sound. And when they dip into the bowl. Speaking of the noise of pistachios, did you know that there's a term in botany called dehiscence, which is where things split naturally?
Nice.
So poppy seeds do it, and pistachio nuts actually dehisce and split on the tree. So you can actually hear them.
Oh.
If you're in a big pistachio grove, you can hear a little...
Cool.
And there'll be another.
Like a little pistachio song.
Yeah.
So one for the Peach of the Pistachio book.
Aww. On pistachio shells. They are actually a really interesting byproduct. So you know how we spoke about bagasse for sugarcane, and you can use it to make like all sorts of packaging stuff. There is a lot of useful carbohydrate and a lot of useful protein in the hull. So that kind of like papery layer around the seed. Also, the actual physical shell has such weird properties.
Yes. Because I read this.
It's so cool. So it's been called the holy grail of materials because it is both tough and stiff, which I thought were the same thing. But they are not the same thing.
No, because everything that's stiff is usually quite brittle.
Exactly, like glass. And then everything that's tough is usually really flexible, like spider silk.
Super
strong. Pistachio shells have both of these properties.
I actually can't break that with my... I'm basically trying to like crush one half of my of an empty pistachio shell, and it is physically impossible to do so. And yeah. I am weak but I'm not that weak.
If you got a hammer and smacked it on one of those half pieces of shell, it'd be really hard to break.
Wow.
And that is because the cells in them are so tightly bonded together. They're like specifically one kind of cell. A lot of other nuts and like seeds and stuff have multiple cells, but these shells are like one particular kind of cell, and they're locked together in ball and joint locks, kind of like your hip joint.
Mm.
And it means that they're so, so hard to pull apart that you have to physically break the cells up, like themselves, in two. Yeah.
It's like a 3D jigsaw, and each cell has a connection with 14 other pieces. So it's like a three-dimensional jigsaw with like these really knobbly but really well tessellating shapes that just fit together perfectly, interlocking.
So they're looking at using them to create like shock absorbing devices like helmets and car bumpers with all of these waste shells, which I love.
I mean, they're already crash helmets for borrowers, aren't they?
Oh, I forgot about that.
A little mouse hat.
Oh, it's so nice.
I think it's time for our third and final lunchbox. Jack.
I've brought you guys a Watergate salad.
Ooh.
Oh my God. What the fuck is that?
That is...
That looks like a Halloween dish.
It does.
What we're looking at here is, it's like a pale green colour. The consistency is of...
Snot.
Mayonnaise-ish. And then in it are marshmallows and what looks like grapes.
Would you like to try some, Manny?
Can I try some?
Yeah, please, please, tuck in. I'm going to have some.
All right.
I mean, I don't really know what I'm about to eat. Oh, God.
Ooh, there's a walnut in there.
Correct.
Yeah, there's definitely walnuts.
And a pineapple.
Correct.
And loads of marshmallow. Mm.
Correct.
I like that
a lot. Two more ingredients.
Cream.
Condensed milk.
Cream.
Oh, okay.
I shouldn't eat too much.
And... it's pistachio pudding. TM.
What's pistachio pudding? That's a new one.
Kraft came up with all sorts of new ingredients when the gelatin boom of the 1970s happened. Mm-hmm. One of the things they made was a pistachio jello, which is called pistachio pudding. Now, I bought this specially imported from the USA. It's basically a white powder in a brown paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just sort of magically goes green when you mix it with liquid. So this... it's described as a salad. I don't know if that's just because it's green. There was a whole raft of these salads called Delights, which I think is where we get Angel Delight from. And they're basically just super simple.
But also definitively not salads.
Well, I don't know. But what is the definition of a salad? Because this is kind of a fruit salad, right?
I would actually say the reason why they're called salads is because they're cold.
Right, which this one is.
Yeah.
And it is green. Which it's a kind salad of
like
makes.
The food cube theory, like,
I know.
What is a salad?
Yeah.
A cold mixture in a dressing of some description.
Is an ice cream a salad?
It's cold and green, then it must be a salad. So wait, this pistachio pudding doesn't taste anything like pistachios.
No, well, I looked at the ingredients and there's a lot of sugar, first of all, and actually almonds. Come before pistachios. So the flavour you're getting here is almond, because actually that's what a lot of Americans think that pistachio tastes of, is almonds, because it's got a much stronger flavour.
And why is it called Watergate salad?
Nobody really knows. The first instance of it appearing in print was the Post newspaper of the San Francisco Bay Area. The Watergate scandal, a quick précis, big political scandal in the 1970s in America involving President Nixon and some wrongdoings at the Watergate Hotel in Washington. And the Post were tired of people complaining that there were bugs in their Watergate salad. So it's a sort of play on words with bugs, as in spy bugs, little microphones to track people's conversations. Realistically, it's quite a weak link. There are also suggestions it's just a marketing ploy because the Watergate scandal was everywhere in the USA in the 1970s. Mm-hmm. And it's seen as the biggest political scandal in American history, at least. Even to this day, any new scandal, even around the world, even in the UK, the suffix gate will be added. You know, we had Pizza Gate. So another theory is that there are a few salads named after hotels, namely the Waldorf. But I think that's the only one I can think of.
The Ritz.
Yeah, you've often do hear of dishes being named after hotels, not just salads. The club sandwich, famously.
But this was predated by a Watergate cake, which is basically all the same ingredients, but with some pastry. There's also some mildly amusing wordplay, like it is full of nuts, as in like, oh, the people instigating the Watergate scandal were all nutcases or something. But there's even a conspiracy theory that the Democrats named it so that they would keep the Watergate scandal in people's mind.
Yeah, I don't think they needed to do that.
Well, exactly. Although, to be fair to these sneaky Democrats, if it's true, we are talking about it today and there will be people listening who've never heard of the Watergate scandal.
Because we do
scandal.
Like a really obscure food podcast. Like, no one is talking about this otherwise.
It's not as bad as it sounds, guys. I can't describe it to you, but it is actually quite delicious. I quite enjoy eating cold, fridge cold marshmallows. As it turns out, they're delicious.
But anyway, I've got this colour theory about desserts, right? Okay. And Lord knows I love a chart. So I made a little chart.
Oh, yay. Okay, I love a chart. Mm-hmm.
So I have a theory that all desserts can be split into zingy or creamy.
Oh.
Yeah, okay.
So yellow, for instance, a good example. So lemon, zingy, right? Mm-hmm. The good test is, would you make an ice cream or a sorbet? So you make a lemon sorbet, but banana ice cream. Anyway, I've gone through the colours in my head. Blue, if you want to go zesty, you've got blue raspberry. They had to invent that because it's not natural. Mm-hmm. And if you want creamy, you want blueberry, right? Mm-hmm. And then yellow, as I mentioned, lemon and banana. Red, you've got apple, cherry and blood orange for zingy. And then strawberry and raspberry go well with cream. And I think that green was missing a creamy flavour. So we had lime, apple and kiwi on the zingy side.
Oh, I see.
But you wouldn't make a kiwi coffee.
So pistachio took that, became the green, the creamy green food.
And it took the mantle of mint. Because you can get mint chocolate, you get mint coffees, they're not very good. And like, you'd mix mint with cream, you make a mint ice cream, right?
What pistachio has that mint doesn't is a texture.
Oh, exactly.
Mint, when you see it, you don't think, that tastes nice and it feels nice. You just think, oh, mint.
And I think that's happening with purple. We've got the zingies, we've got blackcurrant and grape, and now ube is taking the place.
Very nice.
I do like that theory about needing something on both sides. I don't know who's decided that.
Well, like, this is my opinion.
Yeah, it's okay. No, it's just I was thinking about, like, is there a giant flavour conglomerate where, like, where's the creamy greens at? We need a creamy green.
If there was.
We'll confuse it a bit more and just ask, what colour is pistachio ice cream?
It's not truly green, is it?
It's not green.
No.
And actually, the American Pistachio Farmers website claim no American ice cream, unless it's very expensive, which is flavoured as pistachio, will contain pistachios, all almond.
No way.
Really? Yeah. It is interesting. I'd never thought until I researched this podcast how close almond and pistachio flavour are. But they are quite close. They're kind of like that almost aniseed-y, resin-y kind of flavour.
Speaking of ice cream, in 2024, Premier Inn, so they did a survey where they analysed Google data of 80 flavours of ice cream, and they came up with a global ranking of ice cream flavours.
Okay.
So the top five... Coming in at number five.
Mint choc chip.
Strawberry.
Pistachio.
Oh, okay. That's why she didn't go from five to one.
That is right. Then strawberry.
Then strawberry, yeah.
Then chocolate.
Uh-huh.
Then Neapolitan.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
No, come on.
We can't have that.
That's just bollocks.
That's just like number one, three and four combined. That's not a fair test.
That doesn't count.
But then what's number one?
Vanilla.
Oh,
I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all because everyone's basic bitches.
Why are Premier Inn doing this research?
Premier Inn, respectfully, stay in your lane. None of us care about your bullshit research. That's it for this week's edition of Lunchbox Envy. You can follow our socials for foodie facts and podcast updates. We are on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Lunchbox MV Pod.
You can also get in touch and send us your facts, recipes, and questions by emailing us lunchbox@qi.com.
Thank you very much to avid listener Tara Freeman for suggesting the pistachios episode. We'd love to hear what topics and foods you think we should cover next, so let us know. Email us or DM us on Instagram.
I can see Manu has suddenly delivered a little present to us. It's looking very delicious. Manu, what's that?
So, I brought some pistachio baklava.
Oh,
I know. To end on, I would like you to eat this the proper way.
Oh, what?
Oh, my God.
I haven't got my baklava tongs.
So, according to baklava masters in Turkey who make a lot of pistachio baklava, the proper way to eat it is upside down.
Oh.
Like this.
Like a digestive.
Exactly. So you get the nice flaky pastry on the bottom and it doesn't stick to the roof of your mouth. And then you get all of the juicy syrupy stuff squidging down into the pastry.
Like a doner kebab.
That makes sense. Well, loved that, guys. We will see you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Lunchbox MV was hosted by Jack Chambers, Manu Onrio, and me, Rosie McKean. It was produced by Alex Bell. This has been a quite interesting podcast.